Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to New Vision Organization on Human Rights Demand Blog Talk Radio channel. Your host for today's show is Ms. Leona Brando, the director of New Vision Organization, which is a prisoner activist organization. Thank you, Ms. Brando. How are you today?
Very good. How are you, Ms. Neal?
I am doing very well. I happen to be very angry right now, Ms. Brando.
And what is that reason?
I found out that the system, rather than addressing the real cause of the shooting spree that happened in Santa Barbara, California over the weekend, rather than addressing the real reason why this young man, Elliot Rodger, was allowed to go out and kill six young people and then himself, they are using it as another photo op for gun control. They're using it as another opportunity to misdirect people's anger toward the Second Amendment. And so what they're doing is letting the parents of Chris folk, and he's blaming it on the lack of gun control, when we know that that young man, Elliot Rodger, killed three people by knife, ran over numerous people with his car, which could be deadly, before he shot three people. So this young man used as deadly weapons, he used his knife, he used his car, and he also used his guns. So they're not saying anything about outlawing knives or outlawing vehicles. But, of course, we know that there is an attempt in this country to disarm American citizens. And every time there's a failure in the mental health care system, rather than addressing the fact that mental illness has been criminalized, rather than addressing the fact that this boy's family called police and warned them that they were worried about his mental health and that they felt like he was talking threatening and they wanted to get help for him, instead of them addressing that failure in the mental health care system, they are channeling all of this anger toward the Second Amendment, which gives Americans the right to purchase and own firearms. There's nothing about gun control that would have stopped Elliot Rodger from having a gun because he didn't have a history of being mentally ill. He had never been hospitalized for mental illness. So their assertion that this is a failure regarding gun control, that's a lie. Nothing about gun control would have saved those people from Elliot Rodger's killing them with guns because he had nothing in his background that would have prevented him from buying guns legally. You know,
what I'm saying is,
instead of them addressing the fact that the private prison industry lobbies Congress to prevent families and prevent friends from being able to commit people who are mentally ill before tragedy, they leave this stupid law in place saying that you must prove, usually through bloodshed, to be a danger to self and others before they can involuntarily commit you if you're an adult.
Mary, we have a problem in the country. We're aware of the problem. The problem in this country, first, is greed. I mean, money is coming before human lives. We know that for a fact. We know that we have an epidemic of mental illnesses and addictions in the United States. We also know we have very insecure leaders. They're so, I mean, I'm talking not only mentally insecure, but not even educated to the fact that there are serious problems in the United States that need to be addressed. They address the wrong problems, and this is something that we all know. Now, the greed, this is why violent movies are on television. This is why so many children in school schools are doing these tragic things too, because they're being brainwashed into watching these kind of movies, violent movies on television. First of all, we have a country who is all about violence. We have soldiers going overseas, getting themselves killed, killing innocent people over there, and coming back to this country mentally ill, severely, and the government is so busy the producers are so busy trying to make money that they're using these tragic events in our country and abroad, they're using it to make money, to make movies. We don't need to see movies on these issues because we're seeing it in real life. So this country with the gun issues, this country is making money on guns. They don't give a hoot whether people go to prison or whether people die or whether children are out there shooting up the schools. They don't care because they're making money. This is where we have a country that's so greedy for money that they don't give a hoot about human lives. Now, talking about mental illnesses, there have been incidences where people have called in to the law enforcement, the officials, that have actually made it known that they were going to commit crimes, and nothing has been done about it until the crime is committed. And then all of a sudden, they want to throw the man.
That is because they want them to do it, because the worse crime they commit, the longer they will get to make money off of them as prisoners. It is the private prison industry that caused the mental health care system to be changed from one that addresses preventive measures instead of reacting after crime. I want you to know that Dr. Jean Kennedy is on the line with you, and I will leave you two ladies to your interview. Thank you very much. This is Ms. Leona Brando. She is a director of New Vision Organization, which is a prisoner activist organization. She's aware that over half of American prisoners are mentally ill, and this did not just happen by accident. They carefully laid the groundwork to incarcerate our mentally ill people by withdrawing mental health care. Go ahead, please, ladies. Have a good interview.
Dr. Kennedy, I would first like to welcome you on our show as a guest speaker, and I've heard so much about you, and I'd like to have you tell us a little bit about your experiences and also your activities as a psychologist.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me say thank you for inviting me to the show today. This is our day to acknowledge those who have fought for us, as well as those who have laid down their lives, as what we call a Memorial Day, and how ironic that we should be having such topics of discussion on a day that we should commemorate those who have laid down their lives. We are beginning to wonder if people are laying down their lives in vain. But before I go into that angle of our conversation, let me say again thank you. And for your listening audience, my name is Dr. Jean Kennedy. I hold an organizational development psychology background. I am certified in that area. I would suspect that my area came about as a need when we began to see corporate America and other industries and other organizations looking at people and not looking at people's worth, and feeling that if they could not concentrate in doing their work, if they could not concentrate in being good parents, if they could not demonstrate what it meant to demonstrate appropriate behavior that was impacting their other areas of responsibility, we were a society that felt like it was okay to throw out the baby in the bathwater. So maybe you would have an employer or even an employee who did good work but was also having other issues going on in their personal lives, and you would have an employer that would say, hey, we need to get rid of him or her because I need them to be concentrating on the work. That's what I'm paying them for. So we had organizations like the EAP, Employees Assistance Programs, that showed up that would be able to work with an individual to secure their job, but at the same time began to help that person to be able to stay on their jobs and not lose that. As a result of that, we began to realize that indeed people make up organizations, just like how people make up families, just like how people make up society. And so you cannot separate people from their issues or from their concerns or from the things that are bothering them. And so the wing of psychology brought in a new area of discipline, new as new can be. I think it's been around, but it's been called a number of different names. And that's where folks in my area came in. We began to study organizational behaviors. We began to study organizational development. And we recognized that the most important commodity in any of these areas were people, humans. And if we could not find a way to preserve that human being and people as a commodity, then nothing else mattered. And as you said earlier, my sister, we have used greed to be the number one thing. If we're not making some kind of financial benefit, then it means nothing. Yet people are the most important commodity. So in my area of profession, we look at how can we preserve the person? How can we allow less harm to come to individuals that are put on them through people, through organizations, that's put on them through various systems, that's put on them and create hurt to individuals through the systematic processes of these various organizations. And so that is what, really in a nutshell, what an organizational psychologist is. I have found great pleasure in working with nonprofit organizations, helping them to develop their vision for the work they want to do in their communities, helping them to create their strategic plans, helping to make sure that they come out with the outcomes that they need, and also to help them develop their programs, program planning, and working with those individuals who otherwise may not be able to find certain services within their community. And in the last recent years, I have decided that I needed my voice to get out more, and Medium seems to be another avenue of many, and so not just in writing, but also creating radio shows and radio programs, and so that's what I also do as a radio host on another blog talk. I have that opportunity to also put my spin on some things that I see going on in society. And I also like to practice what I do, the area of social justice and restorative justice. So you'll hear me speak quite frequently about the need to see social justice in the play and through all the things we do, and restorative justice. That is hands and gloves. You can't have one without the other. And so that's a little bit about who I am, so that your audience has an understanding as to why it is I take a position I do in many areas. It's about working with people's rights and recognizing that people are the most valuable commodity we have on the face of this earth.
You know, Dr. Kennedy, you mentioned something about the EAP, the Employee Assistance Program. And when I worked for the Department of Social Services, the Cape and Islands office in Massachusetts quite a few years ago, they had such a program, and it was very beneficial. It helped a lot of the employees, especially when they were under a lot of stress. And back then, there was a lot of stress. We had a high caseload, and there was a lot of things going on. So I think that employee assistance program is an awesome program, which I don't know if they still have it. It's been a while since I've heard of it, until you just mentioned it. But these are some of the things I think would be beneficial, if you could speak a little bit more on that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And you know why we don't see too much of it anymore is because we have changed up the whole human resources department. My bachelor's degree is in human resource management. And I took that degree because I really wanted to see how do we support our organizations, and how do we support the employee, and how do we support the manager. And human resources was the place you went to. When things weren't working out right with you on the job, you went to HR, and they were the ones supposedly that was able to at least sit down and know that what was important for you was to keep your job or to suggest other alternatives. Now today, everything is done so electronically. I mean, people used to go into HR and say, do you have a job opening? And while they were there, it was not just asking, do you have a job opening, but they were also checking out the place, the environment. Would I be a good fit to work in this organization? As well as HR would see you and say, is that the kind of person we would want working here? Now today, everything is done on electronics. You can't even apply for a job today without going through an online application process. And now, my sister, they've got it where it's so sophisticated that even when you put that application together, if you're not using certain buzzwords, that application goes nowhere. So many people are looking for jobs, and they won't find those jobs because it is a system that is being developed. And so it really doesn't matter whether or not you have the skills. If you're not using those buzzwords on those applications, your application will not be picked up. Now, let's talk about the Employees Assistant Program. That was a place that when you went to HR, they knew the value that you had in that department, the work that you did. And the goal was to keep you on your job and make it a win-win situation. And so you would go to an employees assistant program where they outsourced that part of the benefit, their benefit package. It came up under HR. And so you would be able to go and seek a counseling, speak to a psychologist, if necessary, a psychiatrist. And if necessary, be prescribed medication so that you could do your job and be whole again and be able to make it, like I said, a win-win situation. Nowadays, you have people that are working with you that you don't even know that they are capable of coming back to a job and blowing up the whole department. We have students today that are in the educational system that you don't even know you're going to class with someone in that room who is thinking about coming back to school and shooting everyone. We have employees today that you're afraid if you let them go, you don't know if you're going to trigger them off. This is where we have become today. And so the whole Employees Assistant Program has been so outsourced now that if your own personal health benefits doesn't have that as part of your coverage, you're on your own. You've got to go somewhere else and get some counseling. Yet back in the day, that was part of the benefit that the employer provided for you so that you wouldn't be set up for failure. You wouldn't find yourself being at work and being overwhelmed or being treated in a certain way so that the only way you could get attention or get someone to hear you was to go to an attorney for that attorney to then say, yes, this client has been being ill-treated or the conditions of the work environment is not conducive to my employee. It is harming my client. Now we're quick to go get an attorney. Whereas back in the day, we were able to go through an employees assistant program and speak to them and find a way to be able to resolve the situation, be it on the job or whether it was things at home that you had to take with you on the workplace. And so it became a much more holistic and wholesome environment. Not today, because we're driven by dollars. We're driven by money at the expense of other people. And I think that's why Sister Neil was saying this young man, he had signs, but yet no one was listening to that because the police department had to fall within a certain system in order to help this gentleman. Social services, things have to fall within a certain system for them to help you today. An employer, certain things have to happen before they call for assistance. This is where we've gotten today. We've really gotten so far from the landmark now that, I mean, just everything goes. And those were the days when we really could go in and really see our employees assistance program working. And I'm glad that you recognize the value of what that has been to many people. Not today. That's a luxury today in many organizations. They may have it for upper management. Maybe they don't want to lose that person who's bringing in a fixed income figure at the end of the year. So they'll try and save his job only for him to go home and to turn on his exhaust pipe in the locked garage and never make it into his house because he's committed suicide in his car. And yet nobody would have known that six-figure income manager was under that much stress. Or you'll hear something of someone going home, my God, and grabbing a hold of all their family and shooting them to death and then committing suicide, yet you work with that person. You work with that person and would never even see the signs. That's how sophisticated this has become today in the trauma that people are living with the emotional traumas that we live around us. I would like to think then as an organizational psychologist that when I'm brought in to be able to say, this is the bottom line that we have in this organization, but how do we get there with least damage to our people? Because people are our most important commodity, not the almighty dollar that organization chooses to make.
And you know what else I find, too, is the media. The media doesn't help at all, because these very people that you're speaking about, under the stress, and those that are actually letting them know in advance, there's signs. There's always signs before a crime. And the media, they wait until something happens, and they don't have all the facts, and they start reporting negatively about these people. But it's, again, it's not the people themselves. It's the system failing them. I remember years ago they used to have the CEDA program. I don't know if you remember the CEDA program, job partnership, but these are the kind of programs that were really helping, and unfortunately they did away with them. It seems like anything that works they do away with. Or if they put something together, they don't put it together, they don't plan it in detail. I mean it's everything is so half-assed these days. But what you say is true, because there's signs out there, and these men and women and even young people are under so much pressure, so much stress.
Well, we live in a society today that is highly competitive.
And so
if you don't know how to compete, if that's not your personality, your makeup, you're recognized as a failure. So we live in a society that competition seems to be the thing that drives us. The other part is we also live in a society where there's shame and blame. I've got to find a way to shame you, and I've got to find a way to put the blame on you. And so we shame and blame each other. And so we have that as another a disabling factor that we have. We have a society that honesty is not the best policy. Somehow they have made that their driving force, that we cannot be honest. You cannot stand there as a leader, as a president of this nation. You cannot say, I don't have an answer for that. We expect the president to know everything. We expect leadership to know everything. We expect them to walk on water. How unrealistic that is. And yet you have individual leaders who will get away. We will see them doing things that has consequences. We've learned that in school. There is cause and there is effect. There is consequences, and we've become a society that's more reactionary than being proactive. We knew when Ronald Reagan, who was governor of the state of California, we knew when he decided in California to drop all the financial support and all of the budgets that's related to mental illness and mental health programs, when he decided, no, we're going to do away with those. We're going to take those. We're not going to fund those anymore. The writing was on the wall right then. And as a nation, we didn't hear people getting up in the way that they should have and says, hey, if California starts this, this is going to be a trend to the other states, because we know that California is a trend setter for many other states. And so we didn't let our voices be heard as hospitals were being emptied out by people who were identified as mentally ill patients. We had no more services to offer them and no subsidies for those services. Then the same man became president of the United States of America and then became hard on crime and began to tie everything back to behaviors and tied everything back and made behavior a criminal element, not a medical ailment, but a criminal element. And so people began to be put into prisons for having behaviors that were obviously inappropriate, behaviors that needed to be treated, not behaviors that needed to be punished. And so we have sat back as a nation folding our hands and recognizing these kinds of leaders, and now today the piper has come to collect his dues. We are now seeing the chicken coming home to roost. And what are we doing about that? We cannot even send our children now to a university or to school without wondering, will they make it back home? This is where we're at today. You kiss your children goodbye, they go off to high school, and you do not know. First of all, we kiss them goodbye, we send them to a daycare program, don't know if they're going to be sexually molested. Take it up a grade. We send them to school to go ahead and pass these state competences, and they don't pass it. And next thing you know, the child is being labeled as having a learning disability or a behavior problem. So now our kids get expelled, and they get put into alternative educational programs. not, put it up another notch. Now that same teenager who cannot pass their educational system, the educational system, and is now a product to be deemed to go into the prison system, because our schools is one of those pipelines that sends our kids into the prison system. So what about the child who was able to get away and somehow was secured by all of that? Now they go off to college, or they go off to universities. And how many of these shootings are we hearing far too regular? You are not even sure that your child will make it back from that semester, because you could have someone in that system who now is going around shooting. So we have a system that has failed us as people, and we, the people, are the ones who are voting these legislators and these politicians in. When are we going to take back the power, people? When are we going to hold our legislators accountable for voting on good legislation, good policy, instead of sitting back and saying, well, we don't know what to do? No, we can do something about it, and we must.
You are exactly right. I appreciate you. Excuse me, Leona Brando. Thank you very much. This is Mary Neal. I wanted to intervene and let you know that it is now 12:26 p.m. Eastern Time. People who wish to call this station and make comments or ask questions have exactly 3 minutes and 30 seconds to get your call in. The show will continue another 15 minutes after we shut it down, but you will not be able to call if you don't call within the next 3 minutes. The telephone number is 347-857-3293. Again, 347-857-3293. Leona Brando does welcome your calls with your questions and comments. She's interviewing today an organizational psychologist named Ms. Jean Dr. Jean Kennedy, and we're so glad to have them both on air. There is a call waiting right now at 5405 that I want to make you aware of, Ms. Brando. Please continue.
And the caller?
Hey, Leo. Hey, Mary. How you all doing today? Neanna.
Oh, we're doing well. Thank you. Your name and whether you're making a comment or question.
It's me, Anna Santiago from New York. I'm just the conversation. You know, I'm a mother of a prisoner, too, and I'm enjoying both of your ladies' conversation today.
Wonderful to have you call. Thank you so much for calling. This is the mother of a prisoner, and I believe your son is sentenced to life. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. My son is sentenced to double life in Pennsylvania.
Double life. Well, we are sorry about your son, but we are so glad that he has an advocate as a mother who seeks ways to help not only him, but other prisoners have their human rights protected while they are behind bars. Go right ahead, please, Dr. Kennedy and Ms. Bando.
Dr. Kennedy, I was going to actually say, and speaking of young people, this is an issue, and I was just speaking with someone about this the other day. The young people today, there's a lot of gangs out there. You know, gangs have become a big thing. But then again, when I think about it, in my own experience with advocating for the incarcerated, and also as a social worker in the past, there's a lot of kids out there that are very angry. Their parents, and the majority of them are without fathers. A lot of the fathers are incarcerated, mothers too. And one of the things is there's a lot of anger among the youth. And the problem is with the youth today is when you have one or two that are out there committing crime or getting in trouble, you can try to work with them. But when you have a lot of kids out there without parents that are so angry and they're getting amongst their peers who are in the same position with the loss of their parents through incarceration and other issues, then that's double trouble. And my thing is to see these kids incarcerated, whether they be young or old, because there's a lot of prisoners out there who were victimized as children or adolescents, and their issues were never addressed. And as a result, they have committed severe crimes, and they have gotten, you know, life sentences, some on death row. Do you think that there's any any chance ever for these kids to get some kind of a treatment, because this, again, going back to the services, and you mentioned the Ronald Reagan era. It was under Ronald Reagan's rulership or leadership where they took away the job partnership. The one thing that helped a lot of people who were not educated, it helped them to get their education, and it helped them in a lot of other ways. So it was under that era, and I think today, I don't know if there's ever an opportunity for these young people. But I know that they were not asked to be brought into this world. And if we're going to have them in this world, I think it's our obligation, not only ours, but our government's obligation, to see to it that these kids get the treatment they need. And I don't mean incarceration. I don't mean, you know, death row. I'm talking about actually coming out with programs that can help these young people. And maybe at some point in time, when they see themselves as being worth something, then maybe the violence will be cut down and decrease a little bit. Do you see anything like that ever happening?
Well, that's such a good way of thinking, my sister, and I'm with you. You know, I believe that too much that is given, much is required. We have a Department of Human Services that's here, our public services department. And I feel that whenever government gets involved in a person's life, you have now partnered yourself with me. Now, I don't want to sound like a socialist, because I think that, again, America's going through its own transitions of what they believe government should and should not do. And I will put a qualifier on this. I came to America as an adult, so I've lived in a socialist environment. I know what that means, and I don't ever remember my mother having to look at her checkbook to say, oh, I wonder if I have enough money to take the kid to the doctor's office that has an ear infection, or I wonder if I have enough money to go in and get my breast checked or get a pap smear to see what's going on with me. Because, again, we were appointed. We had doctors. We went. We paid our eye taxes. Now, I know that we don't much care for the way this president seems to be working things, and we spend so much time talking about what he isn't doing right, as opposed to making some other suggestions right underneath this administration to make some changes so that we don't deal with the same problem we're dealing with under the Reagan era, because even today we're suffering as a result of some of those things that Reagan puts in place. So we should learn from our past, and if this president is not doing what we want him to do, and then for goodness sake, stop criticizing and sitting out there and put something on his table. Something into his office so that even when he leaves, you can say, we had something on his table. Now, in saying that, I believe that when people like the Department of Social Services come knocking at someone's door and they become involved in that person's life, either because of the foster care system, they're taking your children away, whether they're removing someone from the home, whether they're providing food stamps or Medi-Cal or affordable housing, or whatever the subsidy services that they're providing, once they enter into your life, I believe they have an obligation to make that which is broken whole. Oh, now that sounds very ideal. But you have to understand, I am practicing 100%. I practice it in my own personal life. I practice it in my business life. I practice it in my consultant life. Restorative justice is what needs to happen. You cannot remove a man or a woman from their family, give them time in prison, and not find a way to restore that person, to make them whole, so when they come back into their family and the family that is waiting for them is not ready to receive them and be whole again. Sure, it costs a lot of money, but it costs as much money as it's costing to put someone on death row. What is a double life sentence, for crying out loud? You only get to live once. So why would you even have something that's called a double life sentence? What does that do to that mother? That means that if her son was ever to find and look at himself and become remorse and realize, you know what, I recognize what where I was, and if he is blamed as not even being guilty of that, nonetheless, that is a broken person sitting in that prison system. How does the system who gives him a double life sentence make him whole, make this mother whole, make the community, the relatives, the family whole? We are our brother's keeper. And when we allow the system to do this, we are creating more of a broken society than a whole society.
You're right. And I'll tell you exactly, when I did social work years ago for the social services, one of the problems that happened is I don't think that the workers get enough. I mean, they go to college, they get their degree, but they don't have any experience with cultures. One of the things that we have to do, we have to really know a lot about the different cultures, because in cultures, people discipline differently. So what would happen in those cases is they would get young social workers right out of college who had no experience, they weren't married, they had no children, they came from prominent homes, you know, and they didn't understand. They would go into the homes and they would demand that the parents do, if it was a care and protection or a CHINS, child in need of services, they would demand that the parents do what they want them to do, or they'd have to remove the children. In cases like that, the parents would become rebellious, or they would become defiant, because who are you to tell me how to raise my child? You don't know my culture. This is the way they think. So they would take the children from the home and put them in foster homes that were worse than the biological homes, whereas there were so many children that were being molested or so many children that were being killed. I think, first of all, that when people are out of college, when people are going to school for certain in certain areas, not only should they have that piece of paper that gives them that degree, that authority to have that kind of position, but they should also be required to be trained about cultures. They should be taking tests about their biases, their weaknesses, their strengths, because you can't put someone in the home to, just like you can't, our country can't go overseas and try to tell other countries how to live and how to treat their citizens if we can't take care of business at home. Well, this is what happens in social service agencies as well. And I used to actually take my clients to their counseling appointments in some cases to make sure that they follow through, because I didn't want them to feel that they were alone, and at the same time, I didn't want them to feel threatened by the social services, because that name alone is a challenge for most families and children and adolescents. So these are kind of issues that need to be addressed too. But getting back to the society today, the hearts of many have grown cold, and people just don't care. They listen to the media. They take the firsthand information on one-sided opinions or one-sided testimonies or whatever. The media doesn't know. The media will report anything just to get out there, just to get credits, ratings. But they don't realize how much they hurt individuals and families who are incarcerated or who have loved ones incarcerated. So there's a lot of issues. And as you say, the social service system is a failure. Society in a whole is a failure, because people in society today, they just don't care. If somebody commits a crime, they don't care if they have mental illnesses, while at the same time the loved ones care because they're trying to get help prior to the crime. And they can't get the help because that person is either over 21, that person, you know, you cannot act on behalf of your loved one if they're over 21. But at the same time, if they have a mental illness, they're not thinking rationally enough to go for the help themselves. That in itself is a failure.
And our politicians like to use poster child to advocate for their law. When Mike Reynolds' daughter, who was killed in California by some men who were recently released by prison, they weren't even out on the street for a week before they turned around and robbed her for pennies on the dollar of her purse. Not only did they rob her, but they decided to kill her. Mike Reynolds then decided, as his heart was broken, that his child, his daughter, had been killed. The politicians got a hold of him and used him as a poster child to say, hey, let's make a three strikes, you're out law. And today, now Eric Holder has to be figuring out how in the heck do we get people out of the prison, because it's so overflown. Because, again, we use this man's crisis, bought him up because he benefited from it too, used his daughter as a poster child to come up with a three-strike, you're out. We're talking about systems analysis here. And used this propaganda to create a law that did not do anything more than continue to break up the houses of people, so that a man or a woman is in prison, they come out, they get another strike, they have come out, and maybe they're in the store, and for what they would get for a three-striker, which is sometimes nothing to talk about, what, some bubble gum in your pocket? Because you had an argument with the police as you got stopped, or your light was out, or whatever that would be, that the three-strike, as long as you came in
into the presence of law enforcement. You stood three strikes, you are out. Now today our prison systems are impacted. Even Mike Reynolds himself says, I had no idea when I supported this law that it was going to become this way. And so again, it is the people who needs to drive this thing. If we are a democracy, America, you are a democracy. England is not a democracy. Many of the Caribbean countries are not democracy. Many of our African countries are not democracy. America, you are a democracy. That says you vote in your leadership. That says your vote is meant to be something. That means you can change the law. If you have politicians that are not in your favor, that are pulling monies out of World Worth programs and not putting monies into World Worth programs, then you need not to be putting them up for office. It's as simple as that. Instead of that, we're all sitting around, as it were, with our heads in the sand, and then we become reactionary when we hear of what happened in San Bernardino or Santa Barbara, or tomorrow or before the week is out, God forbid, we'll hear something else on the media again that says, hey, we have another problem. So what are we going to do as society? How do we begin to put our restorative justice back in place? And let me say this, too. Our faith communities are not getting away with it either, because we're made up of emotions, we're made up of a spiritual side of us, and we're made up of physical side of us. When our churches and our spiritual places began to talk about this prosperity ministry and started putting that in people's faces about prosperity, that's when they came off the railroad. That's when they went in a whole other direction, because there was a point there where they spoke to the spirit of a person, where they admonished the spirit of a person. People knew right from wrong. But then when they got into this prosperity thing, they took away the essence of what that true ministry was, which is God's love and our love towards our fellow man. We no longer have love to our fellow man, even if you call yourself a spiritual person. So we've got a lot of work to do as a society.
Yes, we do. And Dr. Kennedy, I would love to have you come back on the show again at a later time, because we're running out of time, and I would like to have you give any information you can as to how people can get in touch with you. Because you are very interesting, what you're saying is very true, and we need to continue to bring awareness to the public and to have people get more involved in making change in these areas.
Thank you very much. I'll give you my phone number and I'll give you my email address. I won't even give you my phone number that you can reach me, leave me a message, is 559-270-1023. Again, 559-270-1023. You can call me, leave me a message. I will return your call. My email address, if you want to email me for whatever reasons, it is drjeankennedy@yahoo.com. Again, Dr. with a D-R, with a J, Kennedy as in President Kennedy, drjeankennedy@yahoo.com. No periods, no space in between. And feel free to send me a note, and I will respond back to you accordingly to your subject matter.
Dr. Kenny, I want to thank you for being on. These are the things that we really, really need to get out there. And ironically, you have touched these subjects that have been a passion for me. And I see too many injustices, including the three strikes. We actually had somebody that was from California that was given 25 to life for a three strikes law where he robbed a department store. And while incarcerated, he and some others witnessed a brutal murder on a black male by the Aryan Nation, the Brotherhood. And when investigating, the investigators had to get this information to all the prisoners, because he had to be one of the witnesses in court. The lawyer for the person that led the whole thing wanted the judge to give them access to the prosecution's investigation report. In turn, the lawyer got it, gave it to his client, and it got back to the prisoners in the prison, and they had to put the men that witnessed it in solitary confinement. So this man was serving his 25 to life in solitary confinement for his own protection against the people that actually committed the crime. And this was the serious case over something the three strikes law did not have to put into effect. And these type of things are often happening all over the place. But again, with the programs that they have out there in the communities and also in social service programs, they're not working. They never did since they stopped it all, the support that they gave. So these are things that we need to